This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Many Michiganders are working remotely right now, but it doesn't get much more remote than the place where astronomers from Michigan State University have been collecting data. They have access to information from an extremely powerful reflecting telescope amid the Andes Mountains in Chile. With us to explain how this works and what they're learning is Shannon Schmoll, director of the Abrams Planetarium at Michigan State University. Shannon, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I think most listeners might be a little surprised to find that Michigan State's planetarium telescope is sited in Chile. Could you explain why that location in particular is important for the work that you do?
Yeah, well, it's not the planetarium's telescope. It belongs to the physics and astronomy department, and they are part owner. So the telescope itself is a collaboration between MSU, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, the Brazilian government, and the Chilean government. So for these large-scale telescopes to happen, it's generally these really huge collaborations. And the reason why it's down in Chile is because Chile is one of the best places in the world to do astronomy. Right now, we're at about 40% of the world's astronomy infrastructure is in Chile. That number is expected to reach 70% here in the next few years. And it's because it's in the Andes Mountains. They're really tall mountains. It puts you above a good chunk of the Earth's atmosphere. Atmosphere is not great for astronomy because it causes things to twinkle. So the less you have to look through the atmosphere, the better. Also, the northern part of Chile is incredibly dry, and that means you got really clear nights, which we really need for astronomy. Michigan does not give that to us. It's over 300 days of clear nights in Chile, in the northern part of the country anyway.
I'm sort of interested and heartbroken to hear that twinkling stars is not what you're going for in astronomical terms.
Yeah, I mean, it's very beautiful for stargazing, and so I think we can all appreciate the twinkling stars. But when you're trying to take a picture of something really far away, when that image keeps moving, that makes it blurry. So in astronomy, we don't want, when we're trying to take data, the twinkling's not so great.
Right. You know, this arrangement that you have with the other people who use the telescope, as you mentioned, it doesn't just belong to MSU. It's more of a timeshare. It's a phrase that probably has people thinking of their timeshares in Palm Desert or the Bahamas. Can you explain a little bit more about what MSU gets access to out of this?
Yeah. So to kind of back up a little bit in terms of how telescopes work in general is that people will submit proposals, astronomers submit proposals asking for time just like you would for funding to the National Science Foundation. And that time is very limited and it gets spread amongst all astronomers in the world who are trying to use the telescope. So by being a part owner of this telescope, which is the Southern Astrophysical Research Telescope, by the way, or SOAR for short, by having access to SOAR, MSU is guaranteed around 3 to 4 nights every single month on that telescope, which gives them the ability, gives our astronomers the ability to do projects that might take extra time that they wouldn't be able to get on other telescopes or might be considered perhaps a little riskier, that could result in a really big result, but you need a lot of data that's kind of like, we're not sure what we're looking for or something like that. And so it gives us that guaranteed time so that we can use it however we feel could be most useful to the scientific community.
Can you tell us a little bit about the clarity of the image and data that you get from the telescope?
So the telescope, because you're in that desert with really still air and a really nice telescope, you can get some pretty good clarity. It's not going to be quite as good as, say, the Hubble Space Telescope, which is completely above the atmosphere, unless you're using a system called adaptive optics. And so a lot of telescopes, professional telescopes, are now equipped with this system where it actually shoots a bright laser into the sky, and then you look at that as if it's a bright star, and you measure how it's being distorted, how it's twinkling, essentially. And then you send that to a computer, which uses these little actuators to change the mirror just right to cancel out that twinkling. And so SOAR does have an adaptive optics system that was installed about 5 or 6 years ago. And so that gives you the ability to get things that are very close to the resolution of Hubble, if not better.
What kind of projects have you been able to do through this arrangement that maybe wouldn't have come through in such a way if you'd had to get your information at another telescope site?
So, again, I'm not the one who collects that data, but our faculty, there's a few different projects. So we have two faculty members, Megan Donahue and Mark Voigt, who work together, and they study galaxies and specifically how active galaxies turn their jets on and off. So that requires a lot of observations and different wavelengths of a lot of different galaxies. And so this allows them to collect a lot of that data that they wouldn't be able to get that time on other telescopes. We also have faculty like Steve Zepf and Laura Chomiak and Jay Strader, and Steve's graduate student, Kristen Dage, who actually just graduated, so now she's Dr. Dage, so congratulations to her.
There you go.
So they've been using it to study globular clusters and novae that are happening. So they're trying to study like how these novae explosions are happening in our galaxies and what the rate is, because it's a little less than we expect. And they're also trying to study and look for potential black holes in globular clusters. Globular clusters are these really old clusters that surround galaxies that can be 10 billion years old or so. And we expect that all the really big stars, they've died by now, but those big stars leave black holes behind. And we're not sure if we would find those black holes still in those globular clusters or not. And so they're trying to find those black holes and study them really carefully to see what's going on. They might have data in other wavelengths of light, and then SOAR lets them try to find the optical counterparts, the visible light counterparts, to try to understand what's happening with these different sources. And again, that's taking a lot of data, a lot of time to look at these things that they might not be able to get on other telescopes.
Shannon, I'm sure it's never been very easy to get funding for astronomy projects, but you know, we're in this time right now where a lot of America's attention, maybe a lot of the world's attention, is toward satellites and their commercial use. The federal government's been very interested in Space Force and other Space Command type projects. Is it difficult getting funding for the kind of projects that MSU researchers are trying to put forward?
So funding in general for science is always very competitive. Everyone is putting in grants every year, and it usually takes a few years to try to get one through. So funding in general is difficult. But I think depending on what you're talking about for funding, for science-based funding, for what our faculty are doing and faculty at universities in general are doing, you're generally looking towards the National Science Foundation or sometimes NASA in order to do your work, which is a bit more science focused, and focus more on just answering these really big questions that help us understand our place in the universe. Whereas when we look at other things like space exploration, you know, NASA's got a lot of funding for sending humans out into space and also satellites, but that's where also a lot more private funding is. So when it comes to more space exploration, we are looking, I think, at a lot more commercial opportunities. I know that NASA is looking at partnerships. We saw that this summer with the launch with the Crew Dragon mission with SpaceX and NASA for the astronauts to the ISS. So that's going to, I think, expand how we fund things as time goes on. We're going to see a lot more of these commercial partnerships. But for these big questions of just pure curiosity of our place in the universe, that's still going through places like National Science Foundation. And it's always competitive, but I think we're still getting really great work done, and we're getting wonderful things out of that.
There are some places in Michigan where you can get a pretty good unfiltered view of the sky, at least to the naked eye. There are parts of the UP where you can see things really well, but a lot of us live in areas that have plenty of light pollution. Tell us how the sky might look if we were standing in the Andes next to the telescope.
Oh, I can tell you that. It's breathtaking, I think, is the best way to put it, and not just because you are at a really high altitude with less oxygen, but because it's a very clear sky. As someone who's also grown up in cities, I don't get to see all those different parts of that sky that I could see in, say, my planetarium. But down there, you're seeing way more stars than you would ever in the city. The Milky Way looks like it's a cloud in the sky. Like, there are sometimes astronomers who haven't seen the Milky Way in a long time that when they go down, they think clouds are rolling in. And no, it's just the Milky Way up there. And the clarity of everything that you're seeing is amazing. It's one of the most beautiful skies.
Yeah. Is the travel situation such that astronomers can go in person and oversee the collection of images?
So for SOAR specifically in MSU, because we have so much time on there, there's actually a remote observing site on the MSU campus that you can actually go and see once campus opens up, not right now. At the moment, most of the telescopes, though, are closed due to COVID in Chile. But normally, astronomers can go down there. There's dormitories up on the mountains that you can stay in. There's cafeteria, so you can get your food and you don't have to bring it up and things like that. And some folks from MSU do go down to SOAR every once in a while. But generally, for us, there's a remote facility here in Michigan. So it depends, and it depends on the telescope.
If anyone hearing this somehow finds themselves in the Andes on the other side of COVID, is the location of the telescope accessible to the public?
Yeah, so there are often tours to the different telescopes that you can go check out. Specifically, there's the Gemini telescope that's also right next to SOAR. And then one peak over is the Cerro Tololo Inter-American Observatory, which is a much larger facility with more telescopes. But they do have public tours that you can go check out. And then also astrotourism in Chile is a really big industry. And there's a lot of these smaller telescopes that you can go and hang out there and actually observe with them, with the folks who run those facilities. So like near there, there's one called Cerro Mayu that I've been to that is very lovely. But there's a bunch of other ones all throughout the country. So if you want to go and do a vacation that's astronomy themed, head down to Chile. There's plenty of opportunities for that.
That sounds so amazing. Shannon Schmoll is director of the Abrams Planetarium at Michigan State University. Shannon, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.